Good morning, Los Angeles, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai, 30 years. Wow. My guest today is Branley Cadet. He's the artist who sculpted the Jackie Robinson sculpture at Dodger Stadium. Don't miss seeing it. And the reason I so much want to talk to him is because how he depicts Jackie Robinson. He shows him as he begins his slide into home plate, which is what he was most famous for. Stealing home plate, can you imagine? A guy throws a pitch 100 miles an hour. You're going to outrun a 100-mile-an-hour pitch? He could do it better than anybody else ever. But he shows him as he begins his slide. Most artists would take the easy way out and dramatically show Jackie at the end of his slide. He did this for a reason. And immediately what it reminded me of when Michelangelo sculpts the David, another leader of his people. It is before he kills Goliath. Rembrandt, Donatello, all the great artists. How do you know it's David? They always depict David holding the head of Goliath, of the giant. That's how you know it's David, because you see Goliath's head there. But not Michelangelo. He wants to show us the moment before he slays the giant. Why? Because the leader of his people, David, is both scared and yet confident. And if you look carefully at the anatomy of David, you will see this, and I'm going to explain what you see in the anatomy coming up. But these are the qualities of a great leader, being scared and yet confident. Where, again, in art, is a leader like Jackie Robinson seen? The actor Sidney Poitier did it in film. He did what Jackie Robinson did in sports. When Denzel Washington got his Oscar, he told the world that he's just been trying to imitate Sidney Poitier. And in a minute, you're going to hear from Jackie Robinson in an interview 7 months before he dies. I want you to hear what a real leader sounds like. You'll hear how he wants to battle racism beyond sports in the construction business. He changes the world in so many ways, just like Sidney Poitier did for the film business. And you're going to hear Denzel Washington's acceptance speech and how he describes it. But I also want you to hear Oprah Winfrey talking to Sidney Poitier. Where is the beginning of his journey? Where does it come from? In surgery, where do we see the Jackie Robinson, Sidney Poitier? In a minute, I'm going to tell you who inspired me to pursue the changes that I made with patents in surgery, things that I've done for the operating room. Clapper Vision is going to be about San Francisco Giant pitcher Madison Bumgarner, who in a dirt bike accident in April bruised his ribs and has a grade 2 AC separation. Why are these two injuries keeping him from pitching for so long? Bruised ribs and an AC separation. Here's the Clapper Vision. To throw a baseball, you need to accelerate your arm and the ball 100 miles an hour. Where does acceleration come from? It comes from your core muscles, latissimus dorsi, serratus anterior, the muscles that anchor themselves to the rib cage. You bruise the ribs, you've knocked out the accelerator. It's your car. You knocked out the gas pedal. What slows down your arm at 100 miles an hour to give a pitcher control to hit the corners of the bases, of the catcher, the accuracy of the pitcher to slow the arm down comes from the rotator cuff. Well, what lives right below the AC joint? The rotator cuff. So Madison Bumgarner, the reason he's taking his time to come back to pitch from these simple injuries, you'd think, is because he has knocked out the gas pedal. And he's knocked out the brakes. And that is why he'll be back probably before the All-Star break. But this is why this injury takes so long in a pitcher. It's because you knock out the gas and you knock out the brake. You ain't driving your car. All right, let's get into today's show. I want you to listen to Jackie Robinson in an interview 7 months before he dies with Dick Cavett talking about what life was like for a black baseball player while he is playing.
Well, I think Carl Erskine, who, in my opinion, probably had the most understanding of the whole situation, he was quite concerned. In Roger Kahn's book, Boys of the Summer, he points out that he would feel awfully guilty when we'd go into a restaurant in the South and all the white fellows would be able to go in and sit down and eat, and the rest of us would have to sit in the bus and wait for a sandwich or something to be brought out to us. And he was guilty that he didn't participate more. But when I think about guys like that, I have to think about lending a helping hand. The Pee Wee Reese's, for instance, a Southerner. And I really believe that it was the Southerner on our ball club that made the Ricky experiment much more of a success than anything else.
Is more.
Because I'm sure that all of their lives had heard that there was a great deal of difference between blacks and whites. And when they started to associate with us and they found out that all of the things people said, that you use the same locker rooms, the same showers, the same facilities, something's going to happen, they lost that fear after a short time. And they became, I guess, as aggressive in terms of the success as anybody.
So Dick Cavett asks him, how's it going? How did this experiment go? This is 25 years after it started. How do you think it ended up?
Well, there were times, certainly, when we thought it wouldn't work, but with the numbers of people that helped, yeah, we certainly thought that things would go as they have now and even a lot further in terms of the front office and the managerial role and that kind of thing. But certainly baseball has got grown considerably, and we're quite proud of the role that we played in it.
And this is what Jackie Robinson's most proud of, to hear this.
You can't even count them a day. It's amazing to me. I keep reading about certain ball players, and one day I look on television and he's black. There's no longer a mention of Joe Blow, Negro ball player, this kind of thing, which is as it should be. I think they should be judged solely on their abilities out there, and the race shouldn't have anything to do with it.
But the journey that he took as the leader was not easy.
I worked for a great guy. I don't think anybody could have done the job had it not been for Mr. Ricky. He was constantly advising and guiding, and I had so much confidence in him, I would have jumped off the bridge if he told me to do it. That's how much I believed in him. And he was a man that was sincere and dedicated and willing to lend that helping hand that's so needed today in terms of the problems that we face in everyday life. Not enough people are willing to do as Mr. Ricky did.
Here's more on the journey.
You name them in terms of race, and they were yelled. Everything, it was quite vicious. I think it's Philadelphia Phillies, with Ben Chapman, was perhaps the most vicious of any of the people in terms of name-calling.
The team members?
Some members of the team, but there is a fellow by the name of Lee Hanley on that ball club that came down to first base when I was there and apologized for the Phillies. He just says, I just want you to know all of us don't feel that way, but it's been led by the manager, and many of the guys are doing it simply because of instructions, I would have to imagine. But it did give me a good feeling to know that in spite of what was coming out of the Philly dugout, one guy would come down and say he's awfully sorry. And actually what they did was to sort of solidify the Brooklyn ball club, because Mr. Ricky told me one of the things he said early was that when your ball club starts to take up for you in certain situations, our battle is most of the way won. And, mm-hmm. And I think that Philly incident started the Dodgers to kind of mold as a unit.
When your DNA is a leader, you can do it in more than one field. So after his beautiful career in baseball, Jackie Robinson decides, I did it in sports, I'm going to do it in another business, the construction business.
Well, we formed a construction company about 5 months ago with a fellow by the name of Arthur Sutton over in New Jersey. One of the things that I've always felt was if we're really to solve our problems, we've got to do it interracially. We broke the barrier in baseball on an interracial basis. And Arthur Sutton, when he started talking about the construction business, we felt very strongly that if we could work it in the same manner we did in baseball, Arthur being a white fellow and Kai Sales and I being the blacks in the organization, that we could help if we would be successful.
And he pulled it off.
And if we can put people in decent housing, give them an opportunity to feel secure, I think this is the answer to most of the problems today. Kids don't want to go home to lousy housing where there are 7 or 8 kids to a couple of rooms and have to sleep in shifts. And so they're in the street. Next thing you know, they're in trouble. If they give them decent housing, and I think it could help give them the kind of inspiration that's needed.
And he broke down the unions, and he really changed a whole nother field that we don't even know about. What about being a leader, being confident, but being scared in the art world? For me, it's listening to this speech by Denzel Washington accepting his Oscar, but recognizing that Jackie Robinson in film was Sidney Poitier.
But he did something that was much more important. He gave me his time, his advice. And I can honestly say that the reason I'm up here today is because of Sidney Poitier, because of the time he gave me, the advice he gave me, the example he provided for me and many other African-American actors. I love you. I respect you. I imitate you. God bless you.
This is Sidney Poitier thanking Denzel.
When Denzel Washington accepted his award that evening, and I was given the honorary award the same evening, it was a special evening. I mean, that I was getting an honorary award for a body of work, and Denzel Washington was receiving the Academy Award, Best Actor Award, for a job most magnificently done, was pregnant with all kinds of things. It represented progress. It represented the dimensionalizing of the film industry. It meant the embracing of a kind of democracy that had been very long in maturing.
What I'm fascinated by, which is what we're going to get into with my guest at 8:15, is, yes, when you depict a leader like Jackie Robinson, when Michelangelo depicts David as a leader, we can all talk about what they do with their life. Everybody knows that. But I want to know, where does it start? What makes a person a leader? This is Oprah Winfrey sitting down with Sidney Poitier. How did you have the fortitude, like Jackie Robinson, to do this in film? Listen to Sidney Poitier answer.
From the very beginning, I didn't believe that. When I arrived in Florida, everywhere I turned, that's what was being said to me. But you see, before I got to Florida, I had had the opportunity through my mother and my dad to have set some kind of foundation as to who I was. And I was not what I was required to be in Florida. I was not that. I couldn't be that. I was taught that I had basic rights as a human being. I was taught that I was someone. I knew we had no money. Still, I was taught that I was someone. We had no electricity and no running water. Still, I was taught that I was someone, you see. I had very little education. A year and a half, in fact, was all the schooling I was exposed to. Still, I knew that I was someone.
It's so cool to be around a leader. But these folks, these born leaders, are what changes the world. Today, I'm blessed to have 7 UCLA sports medicine students watching this whole thing. Hopefully, each and every one of you will become leaders in your field. This is from the movie To Sir With Love, Lulu singing about how appreciative they were for what Sidney Poitier does in the movie, which is in essence what he does with his life. Coming up next, we're going to do some clap revision. I'm going to take your calls. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. That's Lulu singing to Sidney Poitier in the movie To Sir With Love. Sidney Poitier carries himself with such class and dignity, just like Jackie Robinson. But what they did in their respective fields is so inspiring. So I ask you, you're an artist, you're a painter, you're a sculptor. How do you depict in a moment, in an instant, not only someone's career, but what someone means to a race, to a cause? It's all you got. You've got a moment. You don't have a movie camera. You have an instantaneous shot. Well, if you're a genius like Michelangelo, you say, I want to show a leader about to lead. So how does, look here, Google the David for me. By the way, the number is 877-710-ESPN. Google the David. Look carefully at David's right thigh. And I'm an orthopedic surgeon telling you this. I'm going to teach you some art right now. Look carefully at David's right thigh. What do you see? Look at his kneecap. Now look at what he carves. He carves a gap between vastus lateralis. This is the little toe side of the kneecap, the lateral side of the knee. There's a gap between that muscle of the quadriceps muscle and the kneecap. Now look at the left thigh. You will see the kneecap and no gap between the quadriceps muscle laterally because it's relaxed. When you put weight on your leg, your muscle contracts and pulls away from the kneecap. It contracts and you can see it. And Michelangelo knew that. So he chisels a contracted quadriceps muscle on David's right leg. Why? Because he's scared, David. He's retreating. He's being told, if you don't kill Shaquille O'Neal, we're all going to die. And I'm just using Shaquille O'Neal as a giant, Goliath. Same thing for Jackie Robinson. These guys are yelling things out. They're threatening his life. This is what he says about how he was able to put up with it.
I'm sure that a lot of it was thought to be strategy, but it wasn't going to upset me. There was really too much to be done at that particular time in terms of breaking the baseball barrier to allow name-calling to bother me. I keep remembering what my mother told me when I was a kid, although I've always been a guy that turned back. She said something about sticks and stones will break your bones, you know, and so not to be concerned about it. Well, I didn't at the time, and fortunate for the advice that I got from Mr. Rickey and the encouragement and the guidance I got from my wife at home, we were able to withstand most of the kinds of situations that came up. We were prepared because of the numbers of people on our side.
Jackie Robinson was scared, but he had no choice. He's scared and confident at the same time. If you want to show that, Branly Cadet did what Michelangelo did with his leader. It wasn't David, it was Jackie Robinson. He shows him before he slides. And when he was interviewed, he said, it signifies the start of this new era of integration in baseball and beyond. The beyond is the construction industry and everything else that Jackie Robinson did. How do you depict it? Well, when you're a genius artist, you figure out that a leader is all about the beginning. It's just so cool. The surgeries I did this week, oh my God, did I work hard. I was redoing stuff. One patient 17 years ago had a hip replacement that wore out. That was unbelievably challenging. Then the next case is a woman who's had both her knees rebuilt ligaments 20 years ago with staples. Only taking these staples out was not possible. Hopefully later in the show, I'll get into what I encountered and the carpentry ideas that I had to use in surgery this week. But right now, we are joined by the great Jared Abrams. Jared, how have you been?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Good. The surf has been great.
I know it has.
A few days off coming up. I can't wait to get in the water.
How was your flying? Did you fly?
I went hang gliding last Wednesday, Dockweiler Beach. It's called windsports.com. Andy, you should ask for him. And I flew 8 times, running off the sand dune. My feet left the earth. I rose 10 feet in the air, and I flew for about 50 feet with poor Andy running after me, figuring I'm going to end up in the Pacific Ocean, which I didn't.
Maybe we'll get you a flight suit. We'll call it the Flying Bagel.
I'm going to fly right through the hole in the center of that bagel. You know what I just realized, Jared Abrams?
Yes.
That golf, spelled backwards, is flog.
Right.
Which is exactly what it is for 18 holes. It's a flog. You cannot do it. This is what Michael Jordan said. Why do you love golf so much? Why are you obsessed with golf? You know what he said? Because it's something I can't conquer.
Yeah. You know what? I have a quick question for
yes.
you. Can I ask some clapper vision?
That's right. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Go ahead.
So,
and I got food. Oh, my God. Okay. Do you like artichokes?
Of course.
There's a place I ate this week that has the greatest grilled artichoke mm-hmm. that I've ever had. Because they must marinate this artichoke for days. Then they put it on the grill. Yeah. It's called Stanley's. You know Stanley's?
Oh, yeah.
So they went out of business, and now they opened up again, and I took my family there. There's on the appetizer, artichoke, grilled artichoke. I said, oh, my God. You're not supposed to eat parts of the artichoke because it's like poisonous or something, right? There's like a purple part in there. I almost ate all that. That's how delicious it was. So I almost, Steve Paulette, I almost was not here this Saturday. Poisoned. What happened to Dr. Clapper? He got poisoned by an artichoke. It was amazing. So somehow my wife jumped onto my plate and blocked me from having the purple stuff of the artichoke, and I ate the rest of it.
We'll have to
and they
try
have
that.
A chipotle mayonnaise that they put with it. It's unbelievable. Stanley's in the Valley. Don't miss it.
I'm shocked that it's not a baked good or chocolate or a babka that you're
having. I had such grateful weekend warrior patients this week. This week, I must have gained 5 pounds. First, a guy I did a knee replacement on comes in. Dr. Clapper, I brought you a chocolate babka from Delicious Bakery. It weighs like 20 pounds. I kissed him, brought it into the back, and devoured this before my staff could even get up a slice. Then I get the next patient, a giant box from Sweet Lady Jane.
Mm-hmm.
Happy birthday, Dr. Clapper, because next month's my birthday. Coconut cake.
Wow.
Which also weighed about 50 pounds. The greatest thing about Sweet Lady Jane's coconut cake is it's a triple threat, right? Magic Johnson was a triple threat. He's 6'9". He's a point guard. He can play center when Kareem got injured. He can do it. He's a triple threat. Mike Trout, what do they say? He's a five-tool player because he's a triple threat. He can run, he can throw, he can pitch, he can catch, he can do everything. The reason the coconut cake is a triple threat is that they put coconut in the cake, in the frosting, and then they put toasted coconut on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Three different avenues for coconut to get into you.
You're not that. You're a triple threat. You do surgery, you do radio, and you eat.
Don't forget the eating, Jared Abrams. Yeah.
So here's my question for you. I last weekend was watching this Big Three thing that Ice Cube did, the 3-on-3 tournament.
Yes.
And I was so excited. One of the players I wanted to see most was White Chocolate, Jason Williams. And within the first 5 minutes.
By the way, why you can't call it White Chocolate. Why do they do that? It has no chocolate. It's impossible to be chocolate. Call it white icing, not white chocolate. I've always had a problem with that. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
So, you know, he goes up and he comes down and looks like he severely injured his leg. He had to get helped off, and they never really disclosed what it was. And it looks like he didn't really land on it. I don't know if it was his knee or foot, but what do you think?
So he has some Clapper vision. He's 41 years old. God bless him. He's one of the most exciting players. Go on YouTube, treat yourself, and watch him in his heyday. He made the ball move. Talk about no-look passes. Oh, nobody like Jason Williams. So my Clapper vision is when you're a 41-year-old player, when you're an older player, Tony Parker, the key to Jason Williams' injury is he had to be carried off the court. You tear your meniscus, you tear your ACL, you fracture your kneecap, you're walking off the court, you're limping, it's swollen, you're in pain. But you're walking off the court. The Clapper vision is a car accident. You can hit the bumper. You can smash the windshield. You can get sideswiped on the side of the car. You're still driving the car to the shop. When you hear, I was in an accident and the car needed to be towed away, that's a different story. So when you hear that you had to be taken off the court, but here's what's interesting. Meniscus, ligament, fracture, structures inside the knee that could be injured, you're walking off the court. It's fascinating, but Tony Parker, Caron Butler, when you see players having to be taken, carried off the court, it's actually an injury, usually, that's beyond the joint. Mm. Quadriceps muscle, patella tendon that ruptures. So that's what you worry about in a 41-year-old. Did he tear quad tendon, patella tendon? Because that, you ain't walking with your own power off the court.
Right.
That, you need to be assisted. So I don't think they release the injury reports in that league.
No.
But let me tell you something. Car accident, how bad was it? My car was totaled. It had to be towed away. Okay. That's a different injury than bumper, side, door, windshield.
Mm.
So there you go. There's a Clapper vision for you for Jason Williams. I am reading the most interesting book right now called Michelangelo's Mountain. The book is so interesting to me because we think that with the computer and all the technology we have, we own geniuses. But it's not the case. There were geniuses in the 1500s, geniuses 1,000 years ago. Every generation has Steve Jobs, has an Einstein, but they don't have a computer. They don't. So how does a genius manifest themselves? So I'm reading this book about the marble being harvested from Carrara 2,000 years ago by the Romans and the Greeks. So how do you get the ton of marble extracted from the mountain of marble? You don't have a bulldozer. You don't have a laser. You don't have dynamite. How did the Greeks do it to make these beautiful sculptures? This is what they did. This is amazing. They took their hammer and their chisel, which they had. They knocked on the marble, and they made a crease in it. It's not still a 5-ton block or 10 to 20-ton block is not coming out of the mountain. They took wood chips, stuffed it in the crack that you made with the hammer and the chisel, and then, Jared Abrams, poured water on the wood chips. You know what happens? The wood chip, soaking wet with the water, expands, cracks the marble from the block, from the mountain.
Wow.
They had a Steve Jobs. All right, to think this up. All right, coming up next, I'm going to take you into the operating room with me. I'll also take your calls. The number is 877-710-ESPN. There's an epidemic right now in the gym because of what you're doing to lift weights. And I'm going to tell you what you're doing wrong and why you're going to rupture your rotator cuff if you don't listen to me. I'll explain more coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. That's right, George Briones, Steve Paulette, the leader of the pack. We're the leader, the world's leader in combining art, medicine, and sports on the Weekend Warriors Show. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to Robin Whittier. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hi, Dr. Clapper. How are you?
All right. How are you? What do you do for a living?
I'm a mailman, a letter carrier.
Get out of here.
No, I'm serious.
How many years are you doing this?
25 years.
What's the craziest animal that came flying out of a house to chase you?
A giraffe.
No way!
No, I'm kidding.
You know what's interesting? You know what's so interesting about a giraffe? Every time I hear someone say the word giraffe, you know what's fascinating to me?
What?
In medical school, I got stuck in a rotation that no one else was signed up for. So it was just me, called comparative pathology. Everybody thought it was beneath them to go to this class with the veterinarian from the Bronx Zoo and the pathologist. They taught this course on the pathology that occurs to the animals in the zoo versus what happens to human beings. I just thought this would be like the coolest thing in the world. So I went to the class. Nobody else was there. And the pathologist showed me the heart of a giraffe. Now you say to yourself, okay, how will that be different than another animal or us? Think about it. Because they have such a long neck, they need a heart, a left ventricle, that pumps your blood to your brain, to your little toe, to your body. But if you're a giraffe, it has to go sky high because their head is way up there. So it was so interesting to look at the thickness of the wall of the left ventricle in the heart of a giraffe. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Crazy. And where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in the city of Whittier.
Really?
Really.
That's amazing. That's where Richard Nixon's from. Did you know that?
I did, and I went to the same junior high school he did.
So is the house he grew up in still in Whittier? Did they make like a museum out of it?
That I'm not sure of, to be honest. No, I'm not sure.
So let me get this straight. You grew up in Whittier. You deliver the mail. You stayed your whole life in Whittier. You never left Whittier?
I did for a while. I went to Seal Beach, and then I came back to Whittier.
Yeah, Seal Beach doesn't count as leaving Whittier, by the way. I just want to let you know. I'm talking like you moved to Australia or something like that. Wow.
Oh, no.
And 53, when are you going to retire from the post office?
Hopefully at 62.
Okay. My dad worked in the post office. In addition to being a carpenter, I have very fond memories of being a mailman and going to visit him before there were zip codes. Okay, what'd you do to yourself? How can I help you?
Okay, well, I had a laminoplasty surgery in March.
Of your neck or your lower back?
My C3, C4, C5.
Okay, so what does a laminoplasty mean in plain English? In plain English, what it
decompression of the spinal.
Right. So this is basically what it means. Let me give you a clapper vision. Because you're 53, the hole in the bone in your neck, it's called the spinal canal that allows your spinal cord to run through it, just like in your kitchen. You don't have copper pipe. You've got galvanized pipe because it's an old house. It starts to rust. So you turn on the water and drip, drip, drip. You don't have any water pressure in your kitchen sink because the pipe is rusted and it's making the hole smaller. So that's called spinal stenosis. The hole in your bone in your spine gets rusted, makes bone spurs, degenerates, and now you squeeze the spinal cord. You get numbness, tingling, weakness. You got two choices. You can call Roto-Rooter or whoever it is that's going to drill through the galvanized pipe and open up the space, which we can do, which is called a foraminotomy and all these fancy words that we use by neurosurgeons or spine surgeons. Or you can cut the pipe and allow it to become a wider pipe. So you don't even have to deal with the rust. You just make it a wider pipe by cutting two sides of it and expanding the pipe to become wider. A laminoplasty is, plasty means cutting into it and working it, like plastic surgery. And lamino is the lamina, which is the Latin word for the bony cage that surrounds the spinal cord. So you, instead of a Roto-Rooter job, you had crack the pipe, open it up, and make it wider. That's laminoplasty. Did you get better from that?
Well, I thought I did originally, but post-surgery, I also was diagnosed with carpal tunnel and ulnar nerve entrapment in my both hands.
So that's called a double crush syndrome. Did they tell you that?
They didn't exactly say that.
All right, let me tell you what a double crush syndrome is. Okay. If you now, there's a clapper vision for you.
Clapper.
Let's go to Niagara Falls, okay? Here's this beautiful Niagara River, which is draining the five Great Lakes. They figure out that they can make electricity by making hydroelectric power. So they build a dam near Niagara Falls to block some of the water, which they do, by the way. Only 25% of the water actually goes over Niagara Falls compared to what nature had there. So they make a dam by some of the river that robs it of some of the water. If now further downstream, a little tiny beaver makes a dam, he can actually block all of the water. A little beaver can block all the water that comes from all five Great Lakes because only 25% of the water is now coming down the river because the dam is blocking it. This is going to be good, wow. Jared, huh? Yeah, how am I going to get to carpal tunnel syndrome and his neck with this one? Here's the answer. If you are already making a dam blocking the nerve at your neck, then the signal, the working, the electricity that's going down the nerve down your arm is already only 25% of the power that it used to be. You don't need much pressure on the nerve at your wrist, carpal tunnel syndrome, at your elbow, cubital tunnel syndrome. You don't need much pressure there because the nerve is already sick. It's already not healthy. It's already only 25% as strong as it was because you have a dam, you have damage up at your neck. So it's called double crush syndrome because you're banging on the nerve in two places, at the neck and then at your wrist or at your elbow. Capiche?
Capiche.
Okay, so what happened to you? Tell me.
I'm just having like burning sensations for the last 5 days.
So don't let them inject cortisone. They sometimes try to do splints. But if you go to a talented hand surgeon, and I can give you the names of people if you want to hold on, that can take a look at you. It's a very simple and elegant way to release the pressure on the nerve, and you will then save its integrity because you already worked on the dam up above. You might as well work on the beaver dam down below. Okay?
One more question, please.
Yeah.
Would there be a difference in the pain if it was from my laminoplasty not having success as opposed to it?
Yes, yes. And the way to figure it out, Rob, is this. Hmm. You go in and you demand, tell the HMO to go jump in the lake, to jump in Niagara Falls, basically tell them, that Dr. PPO. Clapper told you that you have to have a new nerve conduction EMG. That will tell you if the nerve is still not healthy in your arm, in your forearm, then it means the laminoplasty did not relieve enough of it. But if you see a healthy nerve signal on the electrical study in the arm, your forearm, and then it gets bad in your fingers, then you know the beaver's the problem rather than the dam up above. Capiche?
Capiche.
All right. Listen, I want you to do me a favor. The way you can thank me, find a total stranger today and do something nice for them. Okay, Rob?
Okay. I will. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great day. God bless you. All right, Warriors. Coming up next, we'll do some more Clapper Vision. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors, to the Katy Perry Show. There's nothing cooler than a firecracker. And when I was growing up, man, I couldn't wait to sneak on the subway into Chinatown, because when I grew up, that was the only place I could get firecrackers. And I felt like I was holding gold having these firecrackers. But then I watched Rat Patrol. You don't even know what Rat Patrol is. All right. All you guys out there who know what Rat Patrol, you should Google it. Hey, this guy's riding around not only on a Jeep, but it had a giant machine gun on the back going through the desert trying to get Rommel, the German guys, those good guys, bad guys, and they would blow everything up. So, and this is part of normal childhood behavior for a boy, to light things on fire and blow things up. I got, I don't know, 50 packs of firecrackers. I had a whole bag of it. I bought it like on a street corner. It was like buying drugs practically. Put it on the subway. I came back home. And what do I then do? I decide I'm going to make a stick of dynamite from all of these things. You know what? I actually should not tell this story on the radio, so I'm not going to do that. Let's go to Janet. Wherever you're calling from, you're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Good morning. How are you?
Very good, Janet. Jean Crawford says every female listener is unique to the Weekend Warriors Show because they ain't listening during the week. They're just listening to this show. So thank you for being a loyal listener.
Thank you for your help.
My pleasure. Tell me how I can help you. I only have a few minutes.
Okay. My daughter-in-law, Laura, had a tumor on her upper jaw, and she went in and had surgery, and they took the tumor out. It was benign. And so they put a bone graft in the upper jaw, and that bone graft did not take, and that's been a year. And so we were wondering, instead of going back in and having surgery again for another bone graft that might not take, is there any other procedure that she could go through to not make two surgeries in a row? Because I guess they're going to put a steel plate in with it and then take the steel plate out afterwards.
So, I am a medical doctor, which means I went to medical school, and then I became a surgeon. People can, and for the first 2 years of medical school, you share the same clinical classes with dentists who are going to dental school, who also are doctors, doctor of dental medicine and dental surgery. The MDs love to not want to talk to dentists, as if there's some kind of like podiatrists and everybody's fighting amongst themselves. This is like human nature. You got to fight with everybody. But if an MD really told the truth, we owe, particularly in orthopedic surgery, we owe so much to the dentist, because it's from dentistry. My patents in ultrasonic tools came from going to the dentist. You've heard that story. But the glue, the acrylic cements we use, we didn't dream it up, came from the dentist. When I do hip replacements and shoulder replacements, I use titanium instead of glue to hold it in place. Now bone grows into it. This is an uncemented prosthesis. It's a revolutionary idea. Guess where it came from? The dentist. Because when they do those implants into your jaw, they're the ones that came up with the idea of having the bone grow into the implant. So in a roundabout way, my wife always says I never answer the question, so I'm going to answer the question now. In a roundabout way, you're right, Janet. The answer may be that you can use a certain kind of, it's called tantalum. Essentially, you're a surfer. So you know what a boogie board is. It's a high density foam. Some genius, I actually met this guy once, I forgot his name. He's a chemist. He took a boogie board, high density foam, into a machine and changed the pore size, the density foam. He made it from being plastic into metal. It's called tantalum. Why did he do this? Because this boogie board of metal with all these holes, these porous holes, it looks like high-density foam, perfectly mimics bone marrow. It looks like metal bone marrow. And in patients as an orthopedic surgeon that I have to operate on who don't have bone for me to work with, I can use tantalum, which is metal, and I can cut it and shape it, and it essentially allows me in the operating room to sculpt the defect and put that into the jaw. I'm not a jaw surgeon, but into your hip or your knee or your shoulder, and rebuild your bone with this tantalum, and the bone that surrounds it will now grow into that material. So don't give up. You need to find someone who's doing this kind of work. It may mean you have to go to UCLA or USC, some university type place, but it's important for you to get another opinion, and don't give up. You've already had one procedure, it failed. This is a perfect time to get a second opinion of rebuilding the bone, maybe by using something other than bone, which clearly is failing. No point in doing it again. You want to see if there's another solution to it. Does that help?
Oh, that was awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And you're going to surf right now? Where are you going to surf?
C Street.
Get out of here.
Ventura.
I'll be there tomorrow morning. See you at 8 o'clock.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Jana, God bless you. All right, Warriors, I got about a minute left. Time to talk about food. Being Jewish, Friday night, you have this yellow bread called challah. There's nothing better than having this challah bread. The next morning, I have it with bacon, which right away throws the whole Jewish thing out the window. But I have it dipped in egg with butter and Vermont maple syrup. It's the best thing to have French toast, to make challah French toast. Until this week, Jared Abrams. This week, I discovered something that's even better than challah French toast. You know what it is? King's, the Hawaiian bread. We had a barbecue. We had hamburgers. Instead of getting the white bread bun, my wife got King's Bakery Hawaiian sweet bread for the bun, which, by the way, makes cheeseburgers taste off the charts. But we didn't use them all. So I had a bag of these extra King's Hawaiian bread buns. I get up in the morning and the bag starts talking to me. Hey, Robbie, come here. Maybe if you use me for French toast in the morning before you go to surgery today, you'll have so much energy. I ripped open that bag, dipped it in the egg, and I made French toast with King Hawaiian bread. What do you do with a hamburger bun when you don't have a hamburger anymore? Here's the answer. Make French toast. But it's got to be this stuff. I poured a lot of cinnamon on it. You got to have cinnamon with the French toast as well.
Vanilla extract, obviously, right?
I didn't try that.
Oh.
Yeah, that's another one. Oh, my God. Hi, caramba. It's fantastic. All right, coming up next, Warriors, we're going to talk to the sculptor, Branley Cadet, who made the Jackie Robinson sculpture at Dodger Stadium. Where else are you going to hear this but on the Weekend Warriors Show on ESPN LA 710?